Welcome to the Absolute Unit Podcast. This is Joshua Jenkins here again with Brandon Lansdowne. Brandon, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Got a good nap in today, so feeling refreshed and ready to go. How about you?
Doing good as well. Ready for this discussion here. Today we want to talk a couple different things. First thing here, we want to talk about a couple examples really from church history that would give us good thoughts to think about in terms of our physical strength and physical health and well-being that I think would be really good for us. In fact, what kind of gave us the idea for this part of the episode was in my church, we're teaching through a church history class, and we got several different guys that are teaching that together. And today, one of the other guys in our church, one of the my co-pastor, he was teaching on Jerome and John Chrysostom of the 4th century. And particularly, I wanted to talk about John Chrysostom and the issue of asceticism, which asceticism is basically, it's kind of like a monk style of life, but specifically focuses on just going to the extreme in terms of what you put your body through as a spirit. They viewed it as a spiritual discipline and practice, you know, lots of extensive fasting, different sort of physical strains they would put on their body over long periods of time to try and, you know, sharpen their minds, you know, be spiritually minded, things like that. And so there was, you know, you can look at that ascetic movement and lifestyle and see some good intention, so to speak, but it plays out in a very, I think, unbiblical and certainly unhealthy way in terms of our bodies. But just focusing on John Chrysostom for a minute, he spent a significant portion of his life as an ascetic, where he would live this way and do these things to himself, extensive fasting. And he even at one point in his life stood on his feet literally for 2 years straight, where he would even sleep standing up. And, you know, how you do that, I don't even know. But apparently that's what he did. And there's a number of guys like that throughout history that do that thing, do stuff like that. But the interesting thing that we learned today in our class on that was after that time of his life, he had sustained permanent damage in his body from doing those things. And there were other things he did too. But he had just, I don't know what you would call it in medical terms, but just chronic fatigue and weakness. He was never the same after that, just extremely weak. And what really raised my eyebrow in starting to think about this was he also had certain digestive issues. And I've wondered if that came from just extensive or excessive fasting, where, you know, he does this for such long periods of time and puts his body under such strains. And then I don't know if it caused some kind of damage where he was unable to digest certain foods well, but it seems like that may have been some of the case. Do you think that's a possible theory on how that could happen to somebody?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think that you know, our bodies are made to endure a great deal, but you know, prolonged anything, whether it's standing or sitting, you know, doing that for prolonged periods of time, it's going to take its toll on the body, on your posture, on your joints, on your digestive system. Our bodies were meant to move and function in very specific ways, and so when you do things that that counter that, then I think you're going to feel the physical effects of it. And unfortunately, in instances where you know, Christians have undergone these types of I guess, treatments of their own body, you know, what you see more often than not is, you know, as you say, you know, prolonged extensive issues with their bodies. It's not uncommon in virtually every example throughout church history of men. At least men are the only ones that I've really heard of that this has been the effect.
Yeah, and you mentioned on one of our episodes a few weeks ago, I think it was in intermittent fasting, we were even discussing, even when you do a 16-8, when you come back to break that fast, even there you're starting out with, the fruits or lighter foods like that, because it's easier to digest coming off of a fast. Then you work your way back into meat and heavier stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
So just imagine, I don't know how long they would do these fasts, but just days, weeks, maybe even over a month. I don't know. But certainly you can see how that's a very real possibility. But we were talking as well, you mentioned similarly Martin Luther, obviously about 1,000 years later, but still before Martin Luther's conversion, he lived as a monk as well and mm-hmm. did a lot of these ascetic practices, different really harsh treatments on his body. A lot of his issues were not the same as like John Chrysostom's intentions, where John Chrysostom was more, he was a Christian who was doing these things, to try and be more spiritual, be more disciplined. Whereas Martin Luther was just in terror for years of his life over his sin. He had no assurance of salvation, and he didn't know the doctrine of justification by faith alone, different things like that. He was entrapped in this lifestyle where he was trying to basically atone for his sins by putting his body through these punishments, really is what they were. What were some of those things that he did?
He considered himself to be a very proud monk. He thought that he was the way that it was described by him was, he was the monk of monks, and practiced really severe practices of asceticism, where he would sleep in the snow, or he would beat his body with sticks, and he would go, days and days without eating or drinking anything. And as a result, for the rest of his life, he had severe bouts with chronic illness and fatigue. Some of the things that were listed in the search that I did, he had ulcers. He had severe anxiety and was even considered to have, severe manic depressive bouts. The list goes on: tinnitus, fainting fits, constipation, hemorrhoids. So cataracts, and I think because of these practices that he put on himself, and then also I'm sure later on, as we discussed earlier, that he swung the pendulum in the other direction, and indulged very well in a lot of the good things that are given, but overindulged in those as far as eating and drinking too much and not getting enough sleep, just working and writing, and those two took an effect on him.
Yeah, he really, you said it, he went from one extreme really to the other in his change of life, where then after those days as a monk, he was, he was still very unhealthy, but in the other direction. And he did have his wife, Katie, who helped him in a lot of ways, but still, he struggled with a lot of those things, and a lot of health problems persisted from it. Even other guys, we could go on and on talking about different guys from church history who have gone through similar things. But even a non-ascetic or a non-monk like Charles Spurgeon, who was a great preacher, a great Christian figure that God used greatly, he was as well he had lots of health problems. In many ways, we could say he's a very unhealthy guy, even though he never had a period of asceticism. But what were some of his problems that he dealt with in his life?
Well, he, he dealt with depression as well. He, dealt with chronic fatigue. He was overweight. He was known to have gout, liver problems. And as a result, you know, we were discussing earlier that he died at, you know, what we would consider to be a relatively young age. I think he, you know, we discussed, I think he was in his early 50s. And his body just shut down because of the lack of, I was going to say the treatment, but really the lack of treatment. The way he treated his body is what led to his death. And, you know, I can be sympathetic in a sense because as we were, again, we were discussing, you know, he was undergoing a lot of pressure, had a lot of responsibilities, and you know, in that he didn't take proper care of his body, and it took its toll on him.
Yeah, so I mean, a big lesson from a guy like Charles Spurgeon we could learn is, you mentioned all the different pressures he faced. I mean, a lot of those things, a guy like me can't even understand the weight that he carried and all the different controversies of his life that he was righteously in and on the right side of biblically and in history. But the lesson is, you know, look, to be a man, to be able to face those enemies and to face all those pressures and responsibilities, all the more reason we have then, and it's for a person like that, a man like that, whatever level you are of responsibility and pressures, all the more reason to take care of yourself and to make sure you're strong and fit and eating well and take care of yourself in a biblical way so that you can be the most prepared for the fight. Because as things we've talked about, you know, the spiritual warfare that we face is not disconnected from our physical bodies. They affect one another both ways. So it's a big lesson to learn there.
Yeah. Well, and I think in terms of speaking about responsibility, we need to understand that we also have a responsibility for our people in our place, that, you know, Spurgeon had these responsibilities and he sought to do the best that he could in those. But, you know, just like him, we also have, as men, we have responsibilities to our wives and our children and our churches, our communities, you know, things that we are called to serve in as men. And that's a responsibility that we're all given. We can't just shirk off that responsibility and just, you know, just indulge in, you know, all the fruits of life. We have to be responsible in those things you know, try to stick around as long as we can so that we can be of good use for the Lord and all the things that he's called us to.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's very tempting, and, you know, we even experience in our own lives with much less weight and serious pressures than like Spurgeon, but it's so easy and tempting when you have those anxieties and pressures on you to just cave and compromise and give into the flesh and indulge in overeating food, you know, not disciplining your body to keep up your workouts, things like that. And, you know, we can't give into that. That's part of the fight as well. But going back to like Chrysostom and the ascetic movement, I think there's a couple, there's a two-sided lesson to learn there as well. One, I think it's a lesson in the neglect of the body, which we've kind of discussed as well. But they, you know, they still had in those early centuries a lot of Gnostic worldview hangover, where there is a lot of disconnect between the physical and the spiritual. You know, the physical doesn't really matter. It's not as important. And so that led to, in these ascetic movements, a neglect of proper health and nutrition and taking care of yourself in the right way. And so it's a lesson there. And then on the other side, it's also a lesson in taking on the wrong type of voluntary hardship or excessive or voluntary hardship that doesn't help you but actually hurts you. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about voluntary hardship a good bit, how it's a good thing and how it can lead to, you know, to more good things, you know, in terms of preparing us for, you know, the involuntary hardships that come our way. We know that that's, you know, that's, you could say, a guarantee in life. We know that we're going to undergo difficulties of various sorts. But you know, just like with anything else, going to the extreme examples of those things oftentimes are to our detriment. That they don't contribute to positive effects. You know, they contribute to, as we've seen in all of these people that we've talked about, especially within asceticism, it contributes to negative effects, which then thereby, takes away from everything that we're talking about, the responsibilities that we have as men, to serve the Lord well in all that we do. And so, you know, we're doing much more harm than good. And then at that point, it just becomes something clearly that we should not be doing.
Yeah, I think a big part of understanding a right view of voluntary hardship is understanding it within the framework of how God made us, mm-hmm. and how God made humans and men and women, and how He made us to work and be strong. And that is, you know, understanding the basic principles of He made us to work 6 days and rest on the seventh day.
Yeah,
work
right.
And rest. It's not all work, all hardship, all bodily punishment, but it's that and then rest. It's fasting and then feasting,
mm-hmm.
fighting and feasting. And so that's the framework within which we want to understand and apply taking on hardships, putting your body through physical hardship is within that framework. I think that's how you can guard against some of the extreme things, which we're not really tempted with today in our society, but it's still a lesson to be learned nonetheless.
Yeah.
So something else interesting. Do you have any other thoughts on that, or are we going to move on?
No, I think that's good.
All right, so I want to move on to something a little bit different here. Came across an article. What was this, in the New York Times or New York Post?
New York Post.
And it's a very short article, kind of comical.
I don't think it was intended to be comical.
No. The title of the article is called "Air Pollution is Making Women Fat." study shows.
Finally, someone's talking about it.
So yeah, there's saying here women are getting fatter, and they're trying to find something to point to. What could this possibly be?
It's air pollution.
Air pollution, of all the things we could point to for weight gain in middle-aged women, I think air pollution, we might have found it.
Yeah, right.
I'm just going to walk through this article a little bit at a time, and let me hear your comments on this.
Mm-hmm.
The first sentence is really funny. It says, "Looks like all that water weight might actually be from the air." So that's what the problem was. It's just a bunch of water weight.
Something tells me it might be a little more than that.
New study suggests that long-term air pollution exposure is linked to women gaining weight, particularly ladies in their late 40s and 50s, Uric Alert reported. Observed women who are exposed to poor air quality, specifically higher levels of fine particles such as nitrogen dioxide and ozone, had seen increases in their body size, according to study author Xing Wang, an epidemiology research investigator at the University of Michigan. So, first of all, do you think there's anything to that? They're saying being exposed over long term to higher levels of fine particles like nitrogen dioxide and ozone. You think there could be something actually to that?
I think this is probably a very targeted study that you could take out air pollution and you could insert anything that you wanted and make it say the same thing.
So I have an interesting take on this, I think. I have two takes I could possibly go with this, so I'll give you both.
All right.
One is, I know this is from the New York Post,
mm-hmm.
which is not agenda free.
Mm-hmm.
So on the first response, I could say, well, clearly they are pushing the green agenda type thing.
Right.
Look at this air pollution. If people don't care about how it's harming the atmosphere or the ecology of the earth, because that's something out there that doesn't affect us immediately, then maybe we can get people on board by going to the emotional play here. Your weight is caused by this, so we've got to do something about it. That could be an angle here,
okay,
which I'm very attracted to.
Uh-huh.
The other angle is, I also really despise secular, godless scientists who are doing all kinds of stuff with the environment. Mm-hmm. And maybe there is some sinister thing going on.
Oh, here. I see.
So I don't know. What do you think about
this? I think I'm going to go with the first theory that this is yet another example of people looking for something to excuse without taking responsibility for their own actions. And certainly, within, many of the things being put forth in the current ideologies and, save the planet because, the climate change is going to kill us. I think there's the pushing of the new Green Deal, but then also just making people feel better because there is now something else to blame for being fat.
Which this is interesting because if you listen to our last episode, the whole take on the Gatorade mm-hmm. Fit thing was promoting this new ideology of health, embracing being fat, basically. Health yeah. is what you feel like. And so obesity can be healthy in this new worldview. And so, but now they're saying, so on the one hand, you have people saying that, like, oh, fat can be healthy. It's all about how you feel. And the other hand, in something like this, they're implicitly saying this is a bad thing and here's the problem. So we got to fix it because you're getting fat. But wait a minute, I thought that was good now. Uh-huh. I thought that was, uh-huh. Isn't this air pollution now a healthy thing?
Right, yeah.
Chemtrails is a good
thing. Well, and yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thought is, as we redefine what fit means or what healthy means, it seems to be a little bit confusing to me that, we want to make an excuse for why we're fat, but yet at the same time, I mean, what is fat? The whole push with Gatorade was Gatorade Fit, and they were using this extremely obese woman as an example of that. And then something else that I just remembered, and so I can't remember exactly where I saw this. I know it was on Twitter, but I shared this in our Absolute Unit chat. It says in this ad, meet Jai, I think, Jai Murphy. She's one of our amazing fit guides and is here to help you find your super fit. And you can go to superfithero.com. And the person in the picture, I don't even really know how to begin to describe. I'm showing it to Joshua right now. And if this is an image of fit, then we're in more trouble than I thought we were in, because this woman is exponentially more obese than the woman in the Gatorade ad.
Well, let's carry on here. Maybe she was just exposed to really bad air pollution.
Could be.
In that worldview, is really good air pollution. So anyway, in this article, it continues. The exposure to air pollution was tied to higher body fat, fat proportion, and lower lean mass for middle-aged women. Eureka Alert noted that body fat increased by 4.5% or about 2.6 pounds. The data came from a mix of 1,654 white, black, Chinese, and Japanese women whose median age was 50. They had been tracked for 8 years from 2000 to 2008. Their residential addresses were used to measure the relative air pollution surrounding their homes as well, looking for connections between the two entities. So it looks like they were kind of looking for these connections here. So maybe that first theory is is probably right. They're probably looking for the result they wanted.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, this next sentence.
This is the one I've been waiting for.
All right, I'm going to tee you up for this one here. However, after having said all that, however, exercise and physical activity acted as a deterrent to the effects in these findings, according to the outlet.
What? How could that be?
It's like they've just undermined the entire article right here in this one sentence.
If only we had known that exercise and physical activity helps you to not be fat.
Yeah. And, you know, it gets at what you mentioned, the idea of personal responsibility for ourselves, for our actions, for our lives, as much as we can are responsible for. Because no matter what real problems there may be with our environment, whether it's like we've talked about the bad, the sad American diet that we're all just heavily inundated with, and it's we have to go out of our way to, and we have to be intentional about eating the right stuff. You know, no matter what our environment is, whether there is an air pollution problem or whatever other crazy scientific experiments are being done upon us that we don't even know, whatever the case is, we cannot make excuses as Christians, as
correct.
Men.
Yeah, that's right.
God has not allowed us. We cannot allow ourselves to make excuses. We have to take responsibility for ourselves, for our actions, for our lifestyles. And I guess that's what they're admitting it comes down to in the end.
Yeah.
Then the final sentence, like I said, is a short article. Wang also said that because the study had focused solely on middle-aged women, these findings can't be generalized to younger or older women or men. So there you have it. Air pollution is making women fat. What could actually be making women fat?
So many things that we have already discussed on this podcast that are worth repeating again. You know, I scroll through Twitter from time to time, probably more often than I should, but I see from even from, you know, I may not be too popular with this statement, but from, you know, beloved brothers and sisters of the faith that are, you know, sharing things about, just, you know, soda and energy drinks and cake and cookies and, you know, I don't want to be, a killjoy, but those are things that, you know, we can certainly partake of. I would say definitely within moderation, because that's the thing that's making people fat, like eating more and moving less. Ultimately, that's it. I mean, we've talked about it. It's calories in, calories out. It's you know, get moving, lifting, be active. And, you know, fewer and fewer people are doing that. And as a result, you know, we are seeing the numbers of obesity in America just steadily climb every year. And there's all sorts of studies that are out there, you know, comparing America to other countries where people are less fat. And, you know, the findings are oftentimes just lifestyle and diet. And so that's what it comes down to. And so, again, you know, not to just suck all the joy out of life and say, hey, you shouldn't be eating ice cream. I mean, like, just this week, okay, so this will touch on our challenge from last week of not eating sugar. I did really well. Yep. I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead, but I did, it fits here. I did really well all week long, but then I'm just going to say this as a fact. No one in the world makes better cinnamon rolls than my mom. It's all from scratch. She doesn't measure anything. It's old school cooking.
That's good.
And it's been perfected over the years. And typically, I don't have my mom's cinnamon rolls, you know, any other time of the year except for Christmas. But my wife and another woman in the church and my daughter and her daughter went to my mom's house so that my mom could teach them how to make cinnamon rolls.
Oh, man.
So some were brought back to my house. And so, of course, I'm going to eat one. And so I had one on last night. And then I'll admit I had another one this morning.
Well, it was the Lord's Day today. So
yeah. And they were amazing. But that isn't something that, you know, I think I've said this on the podcast, and if I haven't, then here it is. Like, treats should be just that, treats, yeah. Not something that we have all the time. It should be something that we use to treat ourselves, to enjoy, definitely in moderation. And, you know, when we don't, then we should not be surprised that we're going to feel all sorts of things. You know, we're going to gain weight. We're going to be tired. We're going to have physical fatigue. You know, we're probably not going to sleep well. We're going to have, you know, other types of ailments and you know, pain in our joints and all types of things. And so ultimately that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And obviously we spend most of our time on the podcast talking to men. And this article, of course, was about women and their weight problems. And just think about that for a minute. I can't help but also consider that part of the problem, too, I think has to do with the fact that we have, in our society, we have told and trained women not to be women, not to be what God made them to be.
That's a good point.
Because when you take a woman who was designed to build a home, take care of a home, and help her husband in his job.
Be feminine.
And to have children, you know, most normally, God willing, and to raise them, that's really, when a woman pours herself into that, that is hard work.
Yeah.
Raising up children, taking care of the home, you can go above and beyond and do all kinds of extra things, whatever it is in your lane, gardening or farm animals or all kinds of different possibilities within that, that are really, I mean, honestly, in some way, keep a woman fit.
Yeah.
Who's in that stage of life. But when you take women out of the home, tell them not to have children, replace it with cats, maybe they get married, maybe they don't, but their career is to go and now sit at a desk doing a tech, you know, email job, and go and get your sugary Starbucks every morning with the cinnamon roll or the scone or whatever, that's going to add up and that's going to be harmful to a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think especially just for women, learning again what it means to be a biblical, godly woman, I think will be a major step in going a long way. And that first starts with becoming a Christian, you know, coming to Christ. A lot of these cases are people who have bought into feminism, ungodly ideologies, lesbianism, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like we kind of discussed earlier, bad doctrine hurts people.
Yeah.
Not only in terms of your eternal soul, but in this life, it has negative effects. And it literally can have so on your physical body and health.
It's almost as though the Lord intended for us to, you know, to live and operate in certain ways that lead to our good.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, he knew what he was doing when he created men and women.
And when you abandon that,
yeah,
you see the fallout.
Yeah. Yeah, what can you expect? Things to not go well.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right, well, anything else you want to add to that?
I think that's enough of that.
Well, you mentioned our absolute unit challenge.
Yeah.
No sugar last week. You went for the mom cinnamon rolls. Now your wife and daughter have that skill. So.
Yep.
I did really good overall. I was on the road for 3 or 4 days this week, and so I have to admit there was some small compromises. Very hard to eat well on the road.
Yeah.
You're not in your normal life and disciplines and diet. Overall, really well, a few small compromises, but generally that's kind of my general focus and general diet is not eating those processed sugars anyway. So
yeah, same
here. It's not something I'll just go back to eat a bunch of sugar next week. So.
Right.
Well, do we have an absolute challenge, absolute unit challenge for this week?
We do. So the challenge for this week is, I'm just going to say right out of the gate, one that I hate.
So it's going to be good.
In your workouts this week, put as much in as you always do, if not more. And at the end of each workout, what we want you to do, and we're going to do this with you, is start out, let's just say starting out with 30 seconds. 30 seconds worth of burpees. Just as much as you can put in, as hard as and fast as you can go. See how many burpees you can get in for 30 seconds. And then each day, add 10 seconds to that.
Whether you work out every single day or you
yes.
have 3 days or 4 days, even the days you don't work out, do the burpees in there, adding 10 seconds.
Yeah. I told Joshua, I despise burpees. So this is going to be a tough one for me.
And like so many workouts, like all of them really are, they can be as intense and hard as you make them, or you can go lazy and just coast through it. So put the effort in and go hard with it. As much as it sucks, embrace the suck and see what it does for you this week.
My goal is to get as close to puking as I can without actually doing it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do the same. Well,
let me ask you, since you haven't asked me, what I know you were on the road, but the workouts that you got in, what were you listening to?
Well, I when I hit the road, I had the hotel gym, which ended up just being a bunch of treadmills and then a limited dumbbell rack with a bench. So I was able to get a good workout in one of the days, and then jump in the pool for some swimming.
Nice.
So that was really nice. It didn't happen every day I was on the road, but I got in one good day, and didn't have any music going on. It was just the atmosphere of the gym, sports on the TV. So
okay,
I forget what I was listening to earlier this week before I left, but last week you were into the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
What was it? Anything different or?
Yeah. This week I went back to something I hadn't listened to in a while, which is a band that I don't know if you know about them or not, but the name of the band is called Rival Sons.
No, I don't.
And they're kind of a blues rock. They've got some of their older stuff, has some definite Led Zeppelin vibes to it. And so, yeah, that's what I listened to mostly this week. Listened to some of Jack White's earlier stuff from his Blunderbuss and Lazaretto albums before we started getting too electronic, where it was just gritty kind of Delta blues stuff.
I'm not familiar with his catalog really either.
Yeah.
But I will say I just remember what I was listening to, which I go back to them somewhat frequently, every so often. And I'm going to say this. Some of you are going to think it's really lame and cringe. Others of you will understand how awesome they can be. But not everything. But there are certain albums from Disciple that go hard. I don't like that you're laughing.
Your definition of hard and mine are two different things, though.
But specifically the song 3-2-1.
Uh-huh.
That one, I love it, man. It gets me pumped up. So some old school Disciple can really, well, for me, rock pretty hard. So
for those of you out there who are big fans of metal, just hit me up on Twitter, and I'll share some good music with you that Josh was not a fan of.
I keep trying.
I know.
I will always.
I appreciate the
take
effort.
The taste. You know,
yeah.
Maybe eventually it'll stick, or not. So, all right. Well, I think that'll about do it here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, I appreciate you guys listening. Hope this helps as you seek to make gains for the new Christendom. So, until next time, happy lifting.